When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
The first ever 12-team playoff gets underway this Friday. Then Ohio State and Tennessee play Saturday at the Horseshoe in Columbus. A lot of storylines going on, including the amount of Tennessee fans that have bought some of the Ohio State tickets. Talk all things Ryan Day's future, the Mike Vrabel stuff that might be out there as well. We head out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Welcome on Of the Sporting News. The great Bill Bender joins us. Bill, welcome to the show, bud.
Hey, thanks for having me on. How's it going?
It's going all right here. Got a lot going on. It's that time of year. Happy holidays to you and yours, my friend. But should we expect a Tennessee home game in Columbus on Saturday?
No, but I mean, they'll have a section. You know, when I went to a Michigan game 3 weeks ago, there was hardly any maize and blue in there. There'll be more orange. That will be maybe a little bit of a shell shock. Sounds like a lot are coming up here for this. And maybe, I don't... Still Ohio Stadium, though. I've never seen it get overrun. I've seen just about every other stadium except Penn State get overrun with another fan base. But, you know, I mean, there'll be a larger chunk there, and, you know, they're excited about being in the college football playoff, too.
Should Ohio State be scared in this game?
Well, if they are, they'll get beat. You know, I've been going the other way. Like, they need to play free. I've been in that stadium three times this year, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, and you could just feel the anxiety radiating off that place. And it was weird. I'm thinking, this is a team that has more talent than just about every team, than every team they've played. They have, you know, a Sunday receiving core. Three of those guys are playing on Sunday for a decade. And their defense is loaded, starting with Caleb Downs, who's going to be probably be a unanimous All-American. So, I don't know why there's so much anxiety. I think a lot of it was directed toward the Michigan game. And now, hey, it happened. You move on. You go play in this thing. It's new. Take your best shot and see what happens.
Is Ryan Day coaching for his job on Saturday? Hey, you're exasperated by that question. I like it.
If they lose, I just know from growing up here, living here, how weird it's going to be all summer, you know. As you know, like, my kids play a bunch of sports. I'm around other sports dads all the time. And all summer, the talk's going to be, is Ryan Day, should he be the coach? That will be the summer talk at the next season. And it will get very weird here if they lose, if there's an outlet to get somebody else. So you guys talked about Vrabel. Is it Brian Hartline? Is it Mark? I don't think it's Marcus Freeman. He just signed a new contract. You know, and Urban Meyer denied interest in the job, but I always believe that when I see it. So Yeah, I still think he'll be the coach, but, man, I can't imagine the toxic levels here in Central Ohio if it happens.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how many games does he have to win in order to kind of truly stamp that down? But if you think he'll be the coach regardless, then I guess that's a moot point. I look at it like, even if you don't win the national title, if you make it to the Final Four, you have gone through a good Tennessee team, what could be a great Oregon team, and then you start stacking up some pretty impressive wins, Bill, and I feel like the narrative can change pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I don't know what – when I'm asked about hot seat, I always say games – the game count doesn't really matter because you could go like 9-1 and then get beat by 50. You know, so what if they win Saturday, play Oregon, lose a similar game that they did October 12th? But it's a really great game, and Ohio State has their chance to win, and it just doesn't happen at the end of the game. He will be here next year. What I'm worried about Saturday, I want to hear the stadium. If they come out, and everybody's been talking about this, they go 3-and-out their first two possessions, and Tennessee starts pounding with Dylan Sampson and start hearing Rocky Top in that stadium, which you're going to hear regardless, then that anxiety that I was talking about, it'll kick back in. You can feel it. I don't know if you guys can feel it. You can probably feel it watching the TV.
Yeah, Bill Bender of the Sporting News and the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So Dan Orlovsky was on the Pat McAfee show today and seemed to allude that Mike Vrabel has his sights set on coaching at Ohio State. Kind of seemed like it was like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like almost like a certainty. You think there's anything to that, or you think that might just be some reckless speculation?
Well, I mean, I watched the clip. I saw that this morning or this afternoon, and yeah, it seems like, man, maybe. You know, I thought Mike Vrabel, it's kind of the same thing we were just talking about with Belichick last week, where we were like, hey, there's no way he can relate to high school kids, and he doesn't want to recruit, and he doesn't want to do this. And I'm thinking, well, if Bill Belichick did that, went to college, one of his top assistants, Bill O'Brien, how's he doing in the college game? I'd say pretty well at Boston College. There's no reason why Mike Vrabel, who was around Ohio State, Michigan in similar circumstances. He was a player in 95 to 98 during those Cooper years where some Michigan teams upset Ohio State. So he's experienced that firsthand. He's also been an assistant under Luke Fickle. Urban Meyer, I'm sorry. Do a good job. I'm not sure if he was an assistant under Fickle. I can't remember that year. That was a long time ago.
Let me ask you about the getting back to the game here. I saw Tennessee was practicing indoors. If I was Tennessee, I would find every way imaginable to try to get in some really cold weather situations. But they're indoors today. Do you feel like the weather in going from a Tennessee team, even though Ohio State does have some kids that obviously grew up in the South and didn't grow up in Ohio, do you think it makes that big of a difference? Or is that just an overrated, over-talked about point?
No, it makes a difference. Quarterback position, it does. So for Nico Iamaleava, it makes a difference from the standpoint. We talked about it with Carson Palmer for about 10 years when he was with the Bengals. So, and you looked at his cold weather record, it was not great.
We do it with Tua right now, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think it is a thing. You're a warm weather quarterback, and it will be a thing if Tennessee has trouble throwing the football. Nico's been pretty good on the road this year, but they've kind of treated him, take a ton of chances, and they kind of just, they'll take a couple deep shots. That Thornton receiver is averaging over 25 yards per catch. He's the guy to watch in this game. If they hit a couple with him, that's trouble because that will open everything up for Dylan Sampson, who's a really good running back. They have a really good interior line around Cooper Mays. Where I think, the key to the game is, can Nico play in this cold weather? And 20 degrees. I was told in my meeting before I came in here, yes, 20 degrees is cold anywhere. And I was like, well, it's a little bit colder here.
Bill, looking to the rumor mill in college football, one rumor says Quinn Ewers could stick to college football. Maybe he likes North Carolina and Bill Belichick. Maybe he likes that Oregon purse. I'm just curious, do you think it's likely that Quinn Ewers sticks, maybe basically forgoes the NFL game for one more year and sticks in college?
Well, why can't he like Columbus for one year again and come up so all us writers can get those clicks off the Texas Ohio State game next year if Quinn Ewers was with Ohio State and Arch was with Texas? I mean, I think my page views would do okay there. But no, I'm not trying to. I've seen that rumor, but I just don't know that it has legs to it. Ewers' decision, though, whatever he decides to do, whether it is I don't think he'll be at Texas next year. Anything to back that up for sure, but I just feel like they want Arch to start next year. It's year three. He's not going to sit for 3 years and got too much talent. So they are going to have a quarterback decision, probably similar to when Michigan had Cade McNamara and J.J. McCarthy. Now, J.J. started his sophomore year, and I think there's no way they're going to hold back Arch another year.
Oregon's the number one team in the country. I just there's something about Oregon, and it's not Dylan Gabriel. I like Dylan Gabriel, but there's something about them I just don't buy into completely. They don't feel as dominant as maybe what their record suggests that they are. Does it feel that way to you as well, or no?
Well, I think Oregon. I think they're actually a little undervalued. They were the team that avoided the chaos. Everybody was like treating Wisconsin like they lost. Now they went into Madtown and won. I've seen good Ohio State teams go to Madison and lose. Michigan teams go to Madison and lose, and they went in there and won. They've got a really strong offensive line. Both tackles are awesome. They've got a really strong defensive line. Both defensive tackles are awesome. And Dylan Gabriel just hasn't made mistakes. Dan Lanning has something to prove, I suppose. And I don't like their playoff road, though. You know, they're going to play Ohio State or Tennessee. They're going to play Texas. They're going to do all that before they get to the semifinals, whereas Penn State going to play SMU and Boise State. They're not seeding this thing correctly, and that's the first thing they need to fix next year.
Bill, looking around the rest of the first round here, Clemson, SMU, or Indiana, which other game do you think an upset is most likely?
Out of those three, probably Indiana, and I don't think any of them are going to happen, but I would say Indiana just because it's supposed to snow. They've got to get the running game going a little bit. Against Notre Dame, they could not run the ball against Michigan or Ohio State. And, you know, Cignetti has done a heck of a job this year, but they're going to have to finish that off. And I just don't see SMU going into Penn State and winning. And I like Clemson. I know that Dabo been in that spot. He's not, you know, coaching championship games. But we need these games to be captivating, by the way. All four of them have a spread of a touchdown or more.
Mm-hmm.
If these are all blowouts, you hear the blowback of, what are we doing? You know, why didn't we just do eight teams? And that's kind of been one of my worries the whole time.
Would you want eight teams, or is it more about the seeding? Because to me, it's more about the seeding. I agree with you with your take on Oregon, how that path is so hard and you shouldn't get punished the way that they are. But what's the true fix there?
I think you got to seed these teams properly. There's no sense in saying I would rather have eight because we're not going to have eight. No sports that I watch has ever like pushed it back. Mm-hmm. You know, the NFL hasn't gone back to eight. But I do think it needs to be seeded properly. If you seeded this thing properly, Ohio State would be playing Arizona State this weekend, and Indiana Boise State would be the 8-9, and the winner would go play Oregon. And that just makes infinitely more sense to me than Oregon happen to either play Ohio State in what would be a tough rematch, or Tennessee coming off a win against Ohio State with what they have with a top-10 offense and top-10 defense.
All right, Bill, I know you're the preeminent take guy in college football. Any takes on Travis Hunter's girlfriend and her just behavior around the Heisman ceremonies there?
Well, I saw there was an 8-minute video, and I don't know why an 8-minute video explanation exists in this world, but I know the world we live in, it's certainly possible. I mean, you know, I think Travis Hunter is a fantastic player. I voted for him for the Heisman Trophy. What he's done on both sides of the ball is incredible. But with that, the price is now everything that you do on and off the field is going to be reacted to. I mean, you know, in my threat, my buddies react to everything Joe Burrow does on in the field, on the sideline, off the field, what he's wearing. That's part of the price of admission when you achieve that much fame.
Also, who is calling the police from inside Joe's house? Joe doesn't like that being out there.
Oh, we know, and we've looked it up.
Bill, and well done, Joe. Just well done. Bill, great stuff, buddy. Enjoy the playoffs, and again, happy holidays to you and yours.
Hey, you have a great weekend. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
Thank you so much. You as well. Bill Bender there, Sporting News in the North, Homestead Chrysler, Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So we're not going to react to Bill this once. We usually bring like something back. We're actually going to get right down to defending Kevin Stefanski next on 92.3 The Fan. Jason Lloyd with the Morning Boys today. You know, they're asking questions about, like, well, how much of the Deshaun decision was Kevin Stefanski? This is a great day to ask Albert all the ins and outs of every decision the Browns have made, specifically one huge decision the Browns have made about 3 years ago, as we get closer to should they or shouldn't they bring back Kevin Stefanski and their entire processes and verticals.
The problem there, Nick, is that I feel like we've gotten so far removed from this, we're never going to have a true answer. I'm dying to find out what Albert says. But it's really become a who did you ask, and then you go with the conversation from there.
So what's interesting is we played sound in quick hits of Lima completely misrepresenting, playing the worst game of telephone ever.
Yeah.
Saying that the Kansas City game was my tipping point with Stefanski and Barry, and that's actually not what I
said. You repeatedly said all segment long it was a continuation of a Friday topic, basically.
For me, it was the messaging around the organization, this arrogance that Deshaun's coming back and we still believe he can be a great quarterback, that Kevin and Andrew, even though Jimmy Haslam a week ago at the NFL meeting said, I'm not going to make an emotional decision, apparently everybody just assumes Stefanski and Bear are going to be back. And Myles Garrett, in the midst of a 3-11 season, is like, I love what we're doing here, and as long as these guys are here, I want to be here. There's just a lot of arrogance with the lack of success that they've had. And if you frame it, and I don't want to frame it disingenuously. They won the playoff game in the COVID season. I want to give them the proper credit for that.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that three of your last four seasons have been duds. And this year is the biggest dud of all time. I was cool. Like, I was legitimately cool with this thing when your floor was 7 or 8 wins. Because that's an acceptable floor. San Francisco, I think they've got 6 wins now.
Mm-hmm.
They're likely going to get 1 win in the last 3 weeks. That 7 or 8 wins, that is an acceptable floor for a down season.
Yeah, when, like, the sky is falling that season.
3 wins. Mike Tomlin has never had a 3-win season. John Harbaugh, I think his floor was like 6-10 or 7-9, something like that. Like, those are acceptable. 3-10, now 3-11, on your way to potentially 3-14. This bears so much. Let's dig into this and figure out why it's not working out beyond we screwed up with Deshaun. But while we're on the idea of defending Kevin Stefanski, Jason Lloyd was on with the Morning Boys earlier today and did just that, defended Kevin Stefanski.
I don't think he's lost the grip on the team. I do think this is the year from hell. It's not to excuse him. There is no excuse. Hey, you want to build a case to fire Kevin, it's out there to build. I just think that the whole thing was just sort of an avalanche that buried him at this point. And looking back, I always felt like, man, you know, if there's one guy that I thought that may have been okay, it was Mike Pettine. And he just sort of got swallowed up in the Johnny and in the toxicity and the poison of the Browns and Berea. And if they had just held on, they might have had something there. That's the only coach I felt that way about. And I guess I would make that same case with Kevin of he just got swallowed up in the poison of the season. And they broke an offense that didn't need fixed.
But isn't that telling? Like, this is where, because again, Jason has every right. Jason has been in the locker room. Listen, it's just a difference of opinion here. And Jason is saying, and doing the thing, and I think Ken and Anthony did this as well. I actually am hearing people who I feel like have defended Kevin the most actually saying, yeah, there's a real case here to be made. So that is progress.
Okay.
Progress
is a proud city,
I mean, the proudest city. But like, I might be, all right, I'm done with these, I almost called them clowns. I don't want to be personal.
Yeah.
I might be done with these guys. I understand you might not be. I want to open up the avenue.
Well, I'm done with Barry. It's Stefanski I'm not done with.
For everyone to have how is getting swallowed up and not helping the team overcoming the avalanche, how is that not an indictment on Kevin?
No, it is.
Well,
it
but
is.
That's but not, I, that's but a I defense think, of it from, no, from the it, way Jason it, put it.
Can, that part can exist, and I think you can also acknowledge the idea, and I think this is where I'm coming from, and I think a lot of people are coming from, is that you do see a lot of positive signs with Stefanski. We've seen a lot of positive signs with Stefanski, but I think we're worried about what could potentially happen with Stefanski if he goes to another team. I'm not concerned about Andrew Berry being a GM somewhere else and then turning into Howie Roseman. That doesn't exist. That fear doesn't exist to me. But I think if you give him the right pieces and the right tools in the right setup, I think Stefanski can be a good coach. And so I do worry about it's a Baker Mayfield conversation to the extreme is what it is. In another situation, in another place, could he be great? Yeah, I do. I think he could. The problem is that this is not this situation.
So, I well, okay, so do I think it's plausible that Kevin will get another chance? Yes. Do I know definitively that he won't work out elsewhere? No, there are tons of different dynamics at play. I think the problem is, and I hate to use their own words against him, but I really don't, because that's kind of what we do here.
Mm-hmm.
The Browns need an adult in the room. And what I mean by that is they need an adult in the room that when the avalanche starts to happen, somebody stands up against it. And if Kevin can't do that, like this season, that's what that proves. This season has rearranged what the floor for Kevin Stefanski is with the Cleveland Browns.
I just don't
know
that anybody could fix this. That's the problem. I think this team with the talent that's on the field right now and the situation we have, I just don't know that anybody would have been able
to. Is this worse than anything Mike Tomlin has seen in Pittsburgh?
Yes, the Deshaun Watson.
Where
and
you had one arm
into Jameis Winston.
Had one arm Ben Roethlisberger. You were winning games with Duck Hodges to get to 500.
Yeah, this is worse to me. The talent across the board, yeah. They always had a good defense in Pittsburgh.
They didn't have corners. I mean, they had a pass rush, and they've had a good defensive
line.
They've had bad O-lines. They've had a lack of skill players after Antonio left before they replenished.
And they're an eight-win team. It's not as if he was all of a sudden an 11 or 10 or 12-win team.
No. But the difference between 3 wins and 8 wins is a huge gulf. This continues to come back to, if they were 7-10, I'm not calling for Kevin to get fired. If they were 8-9, and I'll be honest with you, half the reason why I'm calling for Kevin to get fired, on top of Andrew Berry, I will agree that I think Andrew is more problematic. I just understand the fatalistic part of this. If you fire Andrew Berry, you're going to create a power dynamic here, where in a year you're going to be firing Kevin Stefanski. I'd rather do it all.
Might be the conversation we're going to have anyway.
But can I tell you?
I don't know how Stefanski gets out of this and makes himself look good in a year or 2 years from now.
I'll be honest, this is where it's not personal with Kevin. I'm more saying fire Kevin because we don't have a lot of people in town. I'm not saying you're doing this because I think you are another person who tries to be as fair as you can.
That's all.
You don't care about what happens when you go out to Berea. You don't care about the liked aspect. You don't do some phony baloney thing to not do your job, like I'll never call for a coach to be fired. Mm-hmm. You actually espouse an opinion and you stick to it. We just disagree on it. That's fine to me.
Yeah.
That is respectable to me. We just have a difference of opinion. But there's just not a lot of people who actually have the cojones to say what is painfully obvious. If I had said at the beginning of the year, you're going to go 3-11 and you're very likely going to go 3-14, what's the end result? Would say
most people,
everyone's getting fired.
And if I were to give an arrow into the or a quiver into the discussion there, and like pack people with an arsenal, let's put it that way. I think a lot of people. I mean, how I was the one in the all off season being like, you can't go 5 years with one playoff win and expect to keep your job. That's just not a thing you get to do in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love the idea of just being like Stefanski's gone because everything else around him seems so miserable, and we just get to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I personally don't love that, but I also can't sit here and say, yeah, Stefanski needs to be the coach until the end of time. But I do think about what would happen if he ends up in a different situation. And I know he's the type of coach that if he has the right situation, this is not it. If he has the right situation, he can be a good head coach and he would win a lot of games.
How is that different from most? Because see, here's the thing. I do want a head coach that when you have
I'm going to answer the question. I think some coaches are in really, really good situations and they end up looking really good because of it. I think Dan Campbell is one of those coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dan Campbell in the previous week, he's won 11 out of his last 12 games. He was on an 11-game winning streak up until this last week. And the reason why the conversation this week is, I don't know about that Dan Campbell guy, is because in back-to-back weeks, he has put his team in a spot where he's blatantly said, I don't trust the defense, including kicking an onside kick down 10 with 12 minutes left to go, to then not kick an onside kick down 10, 8 minutes left to go in the game. Mattingly inconsistent, and you can see where he holds his team back in certain spots, even if they're winning games.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Dan Campbell took Jared Goff and took, what did they start? Didn't they start something like 3-20?
Well, you know me. I think Ben Johnson is the real reason behind all that success. But that's neither here nor there.
My point is, they took a franchise that was in the ashes of Matt Stafford. They took Jared Goff, who is damaged goods, and they've got 3 straight winning seasons, and they're probably going to be the 1 or 2 seed this year.
But the point is that you can be on a really good team, and you can be a head coach on a really good team, and you still get criticized the same way.
But he didn't walk into a good situation. So with Kevin, I think we underrate the situation Kevin walked into. You walked into Miles. You walked into Denzel. You walked into Baker. And I know we all have takes on Baker. Baker, he walked into Cleveland with a better quarterback than any quarterback since 1999 had. That should account for our analysis of Kevin. And here's the thing. I still see good in Kevin. I'm not just unequivocally, he's not a good coach. But like this narrative that is formed here in recent weeks, and it is, it tells me that there's just some people have blinders on with Kevin. Maybe it's a personal affinity. Maybe it's a working relationship. I'm not, again, saying
I
mean, you.
Yeah, but I just don't see it that way.
But I know you don't. But here's the thing. Whatever this narrative is, well, you know, Kevin just got swallowed up by the negativity in Berea. These are the same people who said, it's not your same old Brown 6 months ago. So did it get negative? Did the negativity show up this year? Like this idea that the Browns have just been a dysfunctional organization, the only thing keeping them above water is Kevin Stefanski. What do we have to show for
that? They're not above water. They're not above water.
But I think that is the narrative. People, instead of just going to, all right, one playoff win, two playoff trips, three out of four losing seasons, with this being by far your worst season, they don't have a rebuttal to that. So the rebuttal is, well, but you, if Kevin wasn't here, boy, it would look. No, I don't buy that. Like that again, you can't listen. I'm okay if your answer is Kevin Stefanski doesn't deserve to be fired. I really am. And I'm, by the way, convert me. I'm not so anti-Kevin.
Well, you know better than anyone. It's really hard in a 3-win season to be like, I'm gonna hit you with all sorts of facts and all sorts of numbers that'll convert you. If you didn't like him before 3-14, you're not gonna like him after 3-14.
But again, I'm saying convert me. But don't make up narratives. I'm not saying you're doing this.
I know, very clear. I know what you're saying. Well, thank you for clarifying.
People can hear that. That they understand I'm not. But we don't have to make up. Like, if we're going to do this, if you're going through the pain of 3-11, let's get real honest. And the problem is, I have no doubt that there's some honesty behind closed doors in Berea. Because there has to be. For these guys to have survived 5 years, there has to be some level of honesty and the ability to go, whoops. Like, you have to. There's no way. If there was a lack of accountability across the board, it'd be Hugh Jackson 2.0. So I don't think that's a case. But they're not accountable outwardly and never have been, never will be with this group. It's all, here, pay attention to this. Hey, we're going to bench Jameis because we don't want to talk about this. Hey, we're gonna trade Baker because that's going to get away from the lack of management on the OBJ Baker situation. There's always some diversionary game going on.
Right.
But if we're going to do this again, I don't want to do this again. All right, I don't want to look at this and go, you had enough talent at the start of the season to compete. This whole thing fell apart, and nobody wants to be honest about it. If we're going to go through this, the point of going through this is...
I don't know that you had enough talent at the beginning.
Well,
I really don't.
But I think that's a tonal change from what we said 3 months ago. But real quick.
We got new information.
But if you're going to do this, if you're going to make me go through 3-11, show me you actually learned something. Show me that you can take self-scouting. You can self-evaluate and you get better. Because right now, it's like dodgeball.
Nick, dodge. Nick, the bottom fell out in a way that I don't think anybody expected. That's the reality of it. No one expected Deshaun to be what Deshaun was and the injury attached to it all. And don't shake your head like that.
But you don't plan for
like,
it?
It's not like... Well,
they put all their eggs
into that basket. And you want to punish them for that? Sure, you can do that. But they were convinced.
But you don't conceive failure. That's the problem.
They were convinced this was a Super Bowl roster. I told you that week 5 into the season, they were convinced of that. I heard behind the scenes.
They're so convinced in their processes, they don't plan for if it doesn't go right. That's stupid.
Magic.
That's objectively dumb.
In the middle of the season after the injury, there's not some magic button they could have pushed to all of a sudden have them swerve into being competitive.
No, you don't.
That didn't exist.
You don't push that button.
It doesn't exist in the NFL.
You don't push that button in October. Do you
know
when you do it?
Your starting quarterback goes down. You are up a creek. You're done. That's how the NFL operates all the time.
But do you know? We can't say that and then give them credit for last year then.
It's how it works. That was a complete anomaly. You know that.
Real quick, let's run it back here. Because what you're just saying there, you don't do that in October. The button that you plan in case of emergency, you plan that in March. And that button that you push.
They got the best backup quarterback in the game to supplement Deshaun Watson. There's not like there's a million quarterbacks that are out there.
Jameis isn't the best backup.
Jameis entering the season was the best backup quarterback the game had to offer.
To whom?
What do you mean? To whom?
Could you have drafted a quarterback in the last 2 years, by the way, that wasn't DTR, that wasn't a fifth-round pick?
They drafted DTR.
Okay,
but could you
not have spent a higher pick this last offseason?
Who were you going to take? Second round, third round?
What are you going to waste one of the few draft picks you have?
They don't have first-round picks. They needed second and third-round picks to actually supplement the roster.
Could you have done other things? Could you have foreseen that this wasn't
What quarterback would you have wanted them to have as a backup plan?
Real quick. Could you have done other things than exactly what you did this year?
Name me the backup you would have gotten. Jameis was the best backup quarterback you could have had on this roster.
We'll do that.
Especially when you're already paying $70 million to Deshaun Watson.
216-474-0092. I'll go ahead and find the quarterback you could have drafted at any point. Because again, you could have had forethought with Baker. If you were so hard-pressed on the timeline and the rebuild, you could have had more forethought than that last year and how that rolled out. Could have drafted a quarterback before then if you didn't like Baker. There are points at every single turn that they could have done something different, and they didn't. That doesn't mean it's all on Kevin. It doesn't mean it's all on Andrew Berry. It doesn't mean it's all on the Haslam. It's all on all of them.
I mean, they took a risk, Nick. It didn't work, and I think you wanted them to pivot and be awesome, and they're just not.
They took
it's
a
not
risk
possible
three
in today's
times.
NFL.
They took a risk three times, and they failed 66% of the time, and then went, who could have seen this failing?
Yeah, their risks have obviously blown up
logic.
In epic proportion to them.
Logic.
Not logic. There was
yes.
no, there was nothing they could have done preseason to be like, okay, outside of having the
Tomlin.
Best backup quarterback and the best. What do you mean explain Tomlin?
Explain Tomlin.
Explain
they
one of the greatest coaches. By the way, who hasn't won a playoff game since 2016, but is just doing everything in his power to get 8 or 9 wins a season?
Yes. Yes, that actually is. When you don't have the talent to be a championship team and you will a team to 9 wins every
Great.
Year,
I don't
that's
want that
a better
existence
coaching
anyway.
Job, then you only
I
can
don't
do
want
it
that
when
existence
you have everything
anyway.
Going your way.
They went for boom or bust. They went for it all.
I almost spilled coffee all over myself.
That would have been bad.
216-474-0092. Is Stefanski worth defending? We'll get to you guys. We'll do biggest gripe and biggest defense next on 92.3 The Fan. Let's start to draw lines. All right, who takes the accountability? Who draws the most blame for the Deshaun trade? What was Kevin's role in it? What was Barry's role? Just trying to ask the specific questions. We might not get specific.
I'm dying to hear what he says. Okay, I don't want to poo-poo it before the conversation has even happened.
Sounds
Albert,
like you're going to poo-poo it.
I'm gonna. But Albert surprises us. He surprises us often. But I'll tell you this right now: Jimmy Haslam could walk through that door right now and say, "Hey, listen, JP, Nick, thanks for having me on the show."
Candidly,
you
gotta say candidly.
As far as I'm concerned, my recollection of it, and I'll just tell this to you guys, not for on-air purposes. Just let's just having a conversation. I had nothing to do with it. It was all Stefanski. It was all Andrew Berry. And I'd say, I don't believe you. And same thing, though. He could come in here and say it was all my decision. And I would tell him, I don't believe you either. At this point, we're so far removed from it. And we didn't have the details at the time. And we never are going to have the details that I'm not believing any leaks. I'm not believing anyone of this side is telling this side or this side is saying it to this side. Because at this point, it is in the best interest of Stefanski and Berry to not be the ones that made the decision on it. And it's also in the best interest of Haslam to, you know, not be the one that went ahead and called the code red. And so I just think we're never going to have a true, honest answer on it.
But we do have Albert coming up in about 30 minutes. We're going to want to make sure to listen to that one.
Please listen. I don't want to.
Right.
He's got other information that I care about deeply.
So I do think, because we got some calls on this I want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I because you are more in the defending Kevin conversation, I want to hear your biggest Stefanski gripe. And as the maybe the number one Kevin Stefanski, as not even a hater, just guy who's willing to say that this isn't great, I'll give you the biggest gripe, but I want you to go first.
Okay. The biggest problem I have with Stefanski. Oh no, nothing's coming to me. Great. Nothing.
Oh, wow.
I had something in between the break and my computer's busted and I didn't write it down and now I feel bad.
And you're the one that always tells me to write down good ideas.
It's so easy for me to come up with things that I hate and it's so easy for me to come up with things that I like. And when it comes to Stefanski, there was one really, oh no, I can't even put that on him. I'm sorry. I was going to say the penalties, but turns out John Harbaugh leads the NFL in penalties. So I can't even do that right now, Nick.
I think the best thing about Stefanski is he's a really good offensive head coach. And now I don't know that makes him a good head coach,
mm-hmm.
but he's a really good offensive coach. And the concern for me is the penalties are real. The concern for me is there's some sort of nonsense almost every year that we have to deal with. This year, the latest has been the Juan Thornhill on the treadmill thing. It's been a couple things. The end of the New Orleans game. And just in general, I don't know he's a great communicator either. So those three things are really concerning to me. But I will tell you, I think he is a, when it comes to scheming up an offense, I do think he might be as a coordinator on the level of Shanahan and McVay, as like maybe they're better at the other head coaching things. Is that a good defense of Kevin Stefanski? That's like an honest like compliment
to
Kevin.
When I talk about the best things I like about him, I think that's one of the, that's at the top of the list. There's no doubt about that.
All right, let's go with, where do you want to go? You call it.
Let's go with Rodney.
Ah, it's because he agrees with you.
No, no, no.
Rodney
it's
and Maslin.
I'm on an island here, and no one's agreeing with me about Stefanski, so it's nice. What? It's me and Jason Lloyd. So, Rodney, it's nice to hear from you.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I think that, you know, letting go of the coach is one of the most asinine things that we can do. And I'll tell you why. Hmm. You're looking at a guy just 1 year removed from being coach of the year to them in the playoffs. Yeah, has he made some mistakes? Yeah. But
name
you
one.
Have to look around at your division.
Rodney, real quick. You know, because Rodney,
let me
real
just
quick.
Say this.
I'm going to give you another chance to say what you want, buddy. But just, real quick, because you've said he's made some mistakes. What do you think his mistakes are?
I think they took too long to move to another quarterback.
Okay. All right.
But my point is, you got to look at it and survey your division. The Steelers are a model of consistency. The Ravens are becoming a model of consistency. The Bengals are becoming a model of consistency. You can't keep doing this. It's a hallmark to a bad team. It's like being left back in school and you say, you'll never catch up. You're never going to catch up in this division. And I'm not even from this area. I'm from Detroit. I like Cleveland because they're like the Lions to me. But you keep doing this same pattern of getting rid of your coach and your front office, you will be labeled as unstable and dysfunctional.
Rodney, it's been 5 years.
Wait a minute. You know what? Again, your organization, the thing you key and you missed is that this organization wasn't ready to run as quickly as it thought it was. The key issues that you are having is that, one, is you lost five coaches, five critical coaches. People doesn't really talk about that.
Yeah, why'd you
but
lose
you
him?
Can't keep... Well, why'd again, you,
they
again, all right. But what I'm saying though is that you don't keep doing this same stuff. And you ask the question, well, why has it happened to Tomlin? What hasn't happened to Tomlin is because they have a system in place. Their record will now. Their system will only allow them to fall so far.
But Rodney, they go through coordinators every 3 years. They've had Todd Haley and Bruce Arians and Fichtner and then different defensive coordinators too.
Consistency, right? But who has been consistent? Tomlin.
Rodney, we got to run, buddy. But I appreciate your call. Okay. By the way, Cincinnati is a 453 winning record. They haven't been to the playoffs for 2 years. I don't know what Cincinnati's maybe. You want to go Baltimore, Pittsburgh, I'll give you.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking at Cincinnati and being like, we're really far behind Cincinnati.
Biggest gripe is his press conferences. Is that a cop-out?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I knew it was. I knew it was.
I like that we can at least have that moment,
though. It was when I said it.
The 5 and 5 next on 92.3 The Fan.